This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Bottoming, the LGBTQ mental health podcast about rock bottoming and beyond. Kindly sponsored by Joe Malone London.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at BottomingPod or visit bottomingpodcast.com for more content relating to each episode.
We've also added a support page to the website to direct you to the right place if you're struggling or need someone to talk to.
Thanks for listening and don't forget to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Hello again.
Welcome back.
I'm Matthew.
And I'm Brendan, and our pronouns are he and him.
So hopefully you've listened to part one of this double parter, where we spoke to Tash and Shivani from The Logbooks. As you mentioned, this time around, we are going to be chatting to Adam Smith, who's also involved in The Logbooks, and also has just released his book, Deep Sniff, which is a history of poppers.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we'll just get straight into it, because we've already done our own spiel, haven't we, in episode one?
We have, too much.
So, yeah, again, it was really, really interesting speaking to Adam, especially after reading the book.
Listening to
the audiobook as well. It's got such a calming voice. There was not a lot I knew about poppers, to be completely honest.
Lies.
No, really, there really
It was
wasn't.
All a lie.
I have had a mixed history with poppers. I've never found them, like, personally, anyway. I haven't used them for a long time, but yeah, I've just never personally found the best use for them, I guess.
Okay.
Maybe I've just had cheap poppers, which, you know, we ask Adam for some recommendations at the end, mm-hmm. So maybe it's time to try them. Who knows?
Could be.
But have you ever tried them?
I have. My first experience of poppers was actually through my straight friends.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a house party when I was maybe like 17 or something.
18. For the record, you meant 18.
Oh yeah, I was legal and stuff. And he was just like, oh, do you want to try this? And it was just like an instant high, straight
and then
up.
Straight down.
No, it was like more of a gradual down, but like, yeah, just for 30 seconds, and it was really interesting.
Yeah, experience. It is fun on the dance floor.
Yeah, I mean, that was on in a living room.
A living room floor.
Which was party. But no, I haven't tried them since, really. Okay, Mum, if you're listening, cover your ears.
Skip 15 seconds.
Yeah, but I don't like to not be present when I'm having sex. And sometimes, even if it's that 30 seconds and it takes me out of it or whatever, I don't like not feeling grounded in my body. And so some people really like that, and that's sometimes what they want from using something like that. But for me, I'm more interested in being there.
Fair, that was very grand, actually. Do you know what? Actually, I'd be really interested in knowing, if you're listening, what your experiences are. We'll, of course, keep them confidential, but let us know, because we could share them on socials and maybe discuss quickly next episode. Because, yeah, we're really interested. I'm personally really interested in what you thought, maybe your recommendations, any funny stories you've got. I have actually burnt my nose with them once.
Burnt your nose?
Yeah, I was really quite drunk. And obviously, I think I was a bit too aggressive in the...
Oh, I see.
And it, like, went into my nostril, which is never fun. Shouldn't do that.
No.
Anyway, we will now hand over to Adam.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, he is, I guess, now the UK's poppers expert.
Mm-hmm.
So, take away, Adam.
Hello, I'm Adam Smith. My pronouns are he, him. And I am a writer and a podcast producer. I co-produced the Logbooks podcast, and I have also written a book that's called Deep Sniff, A History of Poppers and Queer Futures.
So you do discuss it in the book, but can you share with listeners how the book came about and why you wanted to write it as well?
Well, I just think that poppers are great. And I had not really known or learned very much about poppers or what it was. It just, after a while of like using it in sex and a bit in dancing, I just thought, like, well, what are these, what's this stuff that we're all sniffing, and where does it come from, what is it, what's the history? And it seemed like no one knew very much about that. Like, if I spoke to people about it, I didn't, like, it's not like I stopped like in the middle of sex and said, like, oh, you know, to people, like, oh, what is poppers, like, what is the place of poppers in queer history, do you think? Yeah, but could you just know? But I just sort of realized that, like, so many people know what they are, but they don't know very much about them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that just felt, I guess, like a call to action as a writer, was just like, okay, well, there's something to investigate and to think about. And so I also noticed that there's this interesting thing about poppers, that there are lots and lots of people who know what poppers are and who use it. And yet there is loads and loads of people who don't even know that poppers exists. And yet it is a like supremely common drug. Mm-hmm. Even if you look at like national statistics and stuff, it's a really, really common drug. And yet even among those people that don't use poppers, what's interesting is that, like, there's a lot of people that, like, well, everyone knows what cocaine is, including those who have never even seen it in a room before. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows what cocaine is. And it's obviously like a very common drug. And it's the same with poppers. It's a very common drug. And yet it's completely different, because if you don't do it, you don't even know it exists. Mm-hmm. It just flies under the radar. So again, that was another thing that got me thinking about it. And 2 years ago, I was starting to work with the team that produce a festival every year in November. It's a queer arts festival called Fringe! ! And we were talking about what we were going to do at the festival, and I just said to two of the other people in the collective, like, can I write and research and like deliver a talk about poppers? And it was not the normal thing that we do at the festival. We're primarily a film festival, but we have like some bits of performance and other kinds of art represented. But this wasn't even going to be art. It was just going to be me talking, which is not art. So but they said, yeah, go on then, why not, that sounds fun. So I did it, and it, because it gave me like a deadline and a mandate and everything, and so I just spent a while like doing a bit of research into history of poppers, and then put together this talk, and that went down well. And then a bit after that, I was like thinking about what to do with this, because it felt to me like it could be something bigger. Mm-hmm. And then it was lockdown, and then I was like, okay, well, let's do a book.
That's the time.
So how was that process of writing during lockdown? It must have been quite intense. Obviously, initially we could go outside for, say, like 20 minutes at a time, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, did it force you to adhere to deadlines, or yeah, how was that?
Yeah, it was. So it actually happened that I pitched the book to a publisher during the first lockdown and like towards the end of the like really intense bit of the first lockdown, I think. Although memories are hazy. I don't know whether you find this, like exactly what that year was and what milestones we passed through in that year, like personally and when things happened. I don't know. It's a big smoosh. Mm-hmm. So I think it happened like in the roughly towards the end of the first intense lockdown that I spoke to the publisher about it and they said yes. And so then it was definitely from the June 2020 onwards for 6 months. So the second half of 2020 was when I was actually writing it 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. And so in that 6 months, we were definitely in and out of lockdown. Mm-hmm. And between tier 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 65, we were like jumping up and down and in and out and hokey pokey with the lockdown. And so, but I had this consistency, which was 2 days a week. I sat down and I thought about this book and I thought about Poppers and I read stuff and I watched stuff and I wrote stuff. Mm. And so that was really actually quite useful, consistent thing that I did in that like really, really, really difficult period. And the other thing about it was that I don't know whether the book would have been the same if it wasn't for the pandemic and the lockdowns and stuff. Mm. It's impossible to know, but I did find that I was thinking a lot about queer spaces and about queer connections between people and also sex, which, again, in and out, I was and wasn't having and so, for various reasons. And so I think that the withdrawal of things like that and the withdrawal of... in a way, like my freedom and ability to be queer or to do queer rather, because you are always being queer, right? Mm-hmm. If you are, it's more the doing. And so I wasn't doing queer. So I think that the book became a bit more about that and about performance and about like live things that happen in live spaces, performance spaces and stuff, partly because I had to create that for myself. And so I kind of did that in my bedroom where I am right now talking to you and where I did most of the work on it, you know, just creating that that queer space to do queer.
Yeah, that is so interesting actually, because we listened to your audiobook on, we went to Liverpool this weekend, so it was a perfect chance to listen on the train.
Properly pay attention. Oh my
gosh, and, it's my voice for 5 hours. I'm really sorry.
Well, it gives us
and there's a whole chapter about wanking.
It did, because there'd be times I'd be looking out the window and I'd be like, oh, and then occasionally it would be like, fucking. It'd be like a really intense way, it would break up the sentence, but it definitely kept us awake.
Okay. But what I found when listening to it is that there is a lot of freedom in the way you write about, obviously, taking Poppers and the experiences and things like that. And so it is quite an interesting juxtaposition if you can compare that to the way you had to write it, I guess, with such minimal freedom.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that, you know, that's something that there is this connection between queerness and freedom. And I'm obviously using queerness in the broadest sense there. But if you can break it down into the fact of, gay men or men who had sex with men being persecuted by police. Mm-hmm. And honey trapped in public toilets and then fined or arrested and even imprisoned in Britain within living memory. You know, that's a very specific freedom that was removed from people that I feel connected to and that, you know, we have this intergenerational connection with. And of course, there are people living with historic convictions like that today, as we've covered in the logbooks. And so there is this connection between freedom and queerness. And so that was obviously on my mind when the pandemic was happening and the lockdowns were happening and the restrictions, you know, even the quite sort of light touch restrictions were stopping us doing certain things and being who we were. And so I felt that like one of the things that Poppers does is it frees you from your like material body, you know, like even for like 45 seconds, like a lot of drugs, I suppose. It removes your inhibitions. Mm. It makes you feel like a slightly better version of yourself in your own imagination. And it just makes you feel a bit freer. And so that connection, I'm sure that connection would have come up anyway, even if it wasn't for the pandemic, but it was all the more acute because of that, I think. And I think it's also something that we all have to think about when we're thinking about queer history. Anyway, like, freedom is just such an important part of it. And I think that casting our minds to the future, which is obviously what I like to do, like looking back and looking forward at the same time, and the logbooks does that too. Look, you know, when we think about the future, so often we all think of like this like beautiful, perfect place where we will be free, as if like it's a destination. And I just don't believe that that will happen, not because I'm a pessimist, but I feel like I just feel like it's always relative and relational, and I don't think that there's a destination of freedom. And I think that you're kind of, if that's what you're aiming for, then you'll always be missing something. You'll always be looking over people that are not yet free, even if you think that you are free. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a nice way, I guess. It's an interesting way to look at it, because especially overlooking other people, that conversation happens all the time, especially in Western countries, yeah, where gay marriage is the end goal for a lot of people, and then that's, you know, where the fight kind of ends for them. So slightly different topic now. You talk at length about the hyper masculine marketing and packaging of poppers in the book. We're both creative branders, communications type work, so this is especially interesting. What thoughts do you have on maybe the impact that this sort of branding and visual setup around poppers has had on well, gay men especially, but just anyone that has come across it?
Yeah, so I think that this is the story of capitalism as it pertains to like poppers and urban gay male culture, right? So like the tiny backdrop is you know, that around about the end of the Second World War and not long after, when you have, you know, in places like San Francisco, New York, and London, you have an ever increasing concentration of gay men who are identifying as such and living as such, and like growing communities around that. Obviously, you have other parts of the community growing up in those locations as well, and in those communities, lesbians, etc., and other members of the family. But by the time it had become so concentrated that there was gay presses, gay owned businesses, whether it's obvious things like nightclubs, but also other things like barbers and and cafes and stuff like that, and bookshops in these places, at the same time as that, you have the increasing use of poppers, primarily from pharmacists, you know, people going into pharmacists and saying that they've got an angina problem, a problem with their heart. Can I have some amyl nitrite, please? And the pharmacist noticing that it's quite like young, healthy men who don't usually have angina problems that keep coming in and buying this shit. That led to the pharmacist sort of raising alarm bells about that to the state, both the US state and the UK state, the governments and the regulators, meant that there was a prescription requirement that was put in the mid-70s for these things. But already by that point, the cat was out of the bag. Companies had started to set up to manufacture poppers and to market them and brand them as poppers. Well, we can talk about actually the other names that people use them. But I mean, as a product that was like for this purpose, even though they couldn't say that it was for this purpose of sniffing them to open your bum hole so you can have sex there and other pleasures. And so, so you get this like concentration of people with a certain community, with a certain demographic, and they have disposable income. Hello. And then you get companies that are recognizing that, wow, this is like a legit product, and the state is clamping down on the sort of quote unquote illegitimate use of this medical product. And so then they obviously started to like create brands around that, and then advertising and marketing specifically for that demographic. And lo and behold, what was the sort of dominant theme and trend and look of those adverts were this like quite hyper masculine, like buff guy. And obviously that was part of what else was going on in like gay male subcultures in the 70s, you know, the disco, the various different discos and different kinds of looks of what men should be. Tom of Finland had already been, you know, that sort of iconography had been around for some time anyway. But basically, I just think it's really interesting that here was a completely new product that had actually a lot of potential to be marketed and branded in all sorts of different ways, and yet it became advertised by like a beefcake with like 18 abs and like a diesel gas pump in his other hand. Do you know what I mean? And so that's just interesting to me. So your question, what impact might that have had? Well, you know, I think it's great for people that desire that person because they can see this product, and it's great for people that desire that person and want to see that person in a gay context, because mm-hmm. often that body type is, because it's like masculinized, you know, it's often seen as like straight. So it's mm-hmm. great if that is also seen to be fucked in the ass. So that's great. On the other hand, as anything, as all the billboards, as all the, you know, gorgeous people and the Calvin Klein ads and all this stuff has done for decades and decades and decades, it makes some of us feel like shit. You know, so this is the thing. And it's like, this is what's really interesting to me, is that like that place of pop, that placement of poppers in this grand narrative of capitalism and marketing, making us feel like, oh, that's the thing that I want for myself, or that's the thing that I want to fuck, or that's the thing that I want to be, or that's the thing that I want to eat. And then also like, oh, if I just buy it, maybe I could become that. And then also like eating your tub of ice cream at 3 a.m. I'm definitely not that.
Mm-hmm. Two bottles should do it.
Yeah.
So yeah. Those are my thoughts on
that. I think the way you've just summarized that as well, kind of for anyone maybe that, I don't know, has not come across a popper's bottle before, mm-hmm. given the context and the description, I think that was like a perfect summary of the whole lot, because as you say, yeah. it all plays into
the
so
whole
many
lot.
The whole wow. lot. it plays into so many different aspects of it, so
yeah.
Something that we both never heard about before was the link that the press made between poppers and AIDS during the early days of the crisis. Can mm-hmm. you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, and I didn't know anything about that either until I started like mm-hmm. looking into this history and into the history of poppers. And what I found was that when I searched for things like amyl nitrite or amyl in like scientific mm-hmm. research databases going back like decades, that in the very early 80s, it was, I guess, like spotted by scientists who were and doctors who were writing a very, very, very early papers, just noticing the existence of things like Kaposi sarcoma, which is this otherwise super rare cancer happening in otherwise super healthy young men. They also noticed that there was a high proportion of those young men that were also using poppers. So they noticed that they were having gay sex, and they also noticed that they were using poppers a lot. So they made that correlation. And of course, the press, when it started to jump on HIV/AIDS as and call it things like gay plague, then it was looking for the smoking gun, mm-hmm. just as much as the scientists were. And it saw that connection as well, that correlation. It wasn't, you know, now we know that poppers don't cause HIV/AIDS. They do not. But it was just a correlation. But obviously, you know what what journalists are like in the mainstream press and yeah. stuff like that. So so I was like really, really surprised at that. And then when you kind of follow that thread through, and you see that after the identification of HIV as a virus and the discovery of how it was transmitted between individuals, but also like, you know, through a group of people, through a community. And then that was the start then of like AIDS denialism and the idea that HIV is made up and that it doesn't cause, like, you know, that AIDS is not caused by a virus like HIV, you know, and that is still an idea that pervades today in like these tiny sad corners of the internet. And poppers was obviously a part of that conversation, because there were some people that were saying, that were seeing that correlation and saying like, oh my god, poppers cause HIV/AIDS, like gay men, you need to stop doing this, you know, save yourself, stop doing it. And there were campaigns about that, especially one that was driven by two Americans, a writer and an activist that I write about in the book a bit. And they were campaigning. They were trying to get gay men to stop using poppers. And they actually carried on campaigning for that even long after it was established that poppers was not the thing that was causing HIV. So you have to wonder, you know, like why they were doing that. But, you know, that's one of the things. And so that was just a story and a theme that I was like, wow, I haven't heard that before. Mm-hmm. So And it was funny because I hadn't gone into the book thinking like that I was going to do, you know, something big on HIV and AIDS. And, you know, I've done bits and bobs of work around that in the past, obviously, and will probably continue to because it's like so big and important. And I hadn't really expected that that would come up. But mm-hmm. the thing is that it seems that it's such a big thing that's happened to our community that it touches everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was a really interesting, the whole like part that you write about that. I was just, and like on reflection, I'm like, as you just said then, I probably shouldn't have been surprised at that. Was what happened because it does cross over everywhere. But yeah, I thought it was really, really interesting.
Yeah.
I guess on that note, what was your personal either kind of favourite moments of the process or your favourite maybe new fact that you picked up during the whole period?
Okay, well, I'll do one of each. So I think the favourite fact that I picked up, and I won't tell the whole thing, and it's not a giant part of the book, but I won't tell the whole thing just because people might read the book and it's a nice thing that surprises them. Yeah. Buy the book. it's just when Charles Darwin appears, that's all I'll say. And when I saw that he appears in this big story of the history of this substance called amyl nitrite, I was like, oh wow, that's fun, because I already love Charles Darwin as someone who spent years and years and years like studying something and then realizing what the implications were of it, and then like continuing to study on it and sit on it and stress about it and like agonize about whether, you know, literally spent like more than 20 years, I think, developing the theory of natural selection and evolution, knowing that it was basically going to disprove the existence of God. So I don't know. So I like him anyway. And so when he popped up, I was like, oh my God, wow. It's like a sort of a guest, you know, when you're watching like a favorite TV show and then you're like, oh my God, like Catherine O'Hara's in it all of a sudden or whatever. So that was like a favorite fact, but I won't sort of say more about that. I guess favorite moment is just not a specific moment or anything, but it happened several times, and it's linking back to what we said earlier, where I just put on music and I kind of like closed off the world, made myself coffee and was just like really, really in the zone. Like I do this thing where I like plan, if I'm writing nonfiction like this, it's quite heavily planned. Mm-hmm. A particular, you know, passage or chapter or something, it's quite heavily planned, and then I just like sit and write it according to that plan, and so it helps me to get into the flow. And then with the music, which is also mentioned quite a lot in the book, and there's a playlist linked mm-hmm. by a QR code in the back of the book, I just found that really, really useful to get into that zone, and it felt like that was the closest that I could come to like dancing my tits off in a like in the basement of the Glory or something, like, which is so weird but there's something about like embodying that spirit even when I'm just like sitting at a desk staring at a screen and a blinking cursor.
So throughout the book you make reference to Switchboard and the Logbooks, the podcast you co-host.
Yeah.
How did these two projects connect as you're writing?
Yeah, well, the thing is that because of making the logbooks, I have access to this amazing archive of these handwritten notes by volunteers over the decades who've handled the phone calls to Switchboard. And so as Tash and Shivani and I have made that podcast over the past few years, when we go through the archive of those notes and we take photographs of the logbooks, the pages of the logbooks, we like tag those photos with what is in the stories. Mm-hmm. So I had already been collecting logbook entries with the tag Poppers. And we mentioned it a little bit, I think, in there's an episode about sex in season one where we mentioned some questions about Poppers that people had phoned Switchboard to ask. And so I knew that probably no one had actually talked about Poppers coming up on phone calls to Switchboard. Mm-hmm. Like before or written about that. And so I knew that it was one of those things where I was like, okay, well, I can read loads of books about that mention Poppers or watch things that mention Poppers, but actually here is like a primary source. Mm-hmm. And I didn't use that many primary sources. I did use like the notes of the medical doctor from the 19th century who like first used amyl nitrite to treat angina patients. That was another primary source, but I wasn't generally using that many primary sources. Plus when I was writing, places were closed.
Yeah.
So I knew that I had access to that, and I thought, well, I have to use that somehow. So I just built that into my plan, really, and just kind of like was pulling together this big document of any single like reference that I could find of Poppers from anywhere. And so the Switchboard Logbooks was one of those sources. And then there's a story in the book that's about the raids that happened at the Royal Vauxhall Tavern in December 1986, where Poppers were seized, and January 1987, where police turned up in rubber gloves because of their fear and of HIV. And so I wanted to tell that story because Poppers were present there and they were seized in the first case, and there was a whole like court case and everything. And fortunately, it came up in the Switchboard Logbooks, because the RVT being raided by police is something that people ring Switchboard about to say, hey, Switchboard, you need to know, and you need to tell other people who might be calling you to know that the police are raiding gay pubs right now in London. So that came up. And so that was like a kind of a triangulation of historical facts from different sources.
Mm. And this is probably the most important question as we end. And I know people listening are probably going to want to know. What are your favourite brand recommendations?
Well, are you looking for a new sponsor for the podcast? different kind of aromas. So I do get asked this a bit, and I don't have like a really, really firm favorite, because I'm the kind of person that likes to like try widely and like keep experimenting. And so what I will say is that I had sex with someone recently, and he brought Jungle Juice Black Label to the party. I had not had that before. So that was a nice fresh experience for me. So that's just the one that's, you know, foremost in my mind right now, because I sniffed it recently and had a really nice time.
Gorgeous. Get right in those notes, girlies.
So just to round off, where can people get your book and also Black Label?
Oh, yeah. I guess you can get Jungle Juice Black Label from, like, all the main sex shops and the online. Most people buy Poppers online now, because you can get it sent through the post.
Yeah.
As the same with books, of course. You can get Deep Sniff from any bookshop, really. If they don't have it in, then they can order it for you. It's published by Repeater Books, and it's definitely available through our beloved Gaze the Word bookshop in London, which also, if you're not in London or you can't get to London, then they do mail order, and that supports, like, you know, the amazing queer bookshop that is Gaze the Word. And also from bookshop.org, which supports loads and loads of independent bookshops. And so it's certainly no more expensive doing it that way than going to, you know, other book websites. So yeah, you can get Deep Sniff anywhere where you can get books, basically.
One thing I found funny reading while listening to the audiobook was that this might be a well-known thing, but they were used as or sold as room odorizers. That is just wild to me.
That is what it says on the bottles.
I know, but come on.
But that, again, it does explain in the book that is like the legal requirement that was needed, like medically.
I know.
Is it the different things? Is it really
but how hilarious?
Because I never knew why it said room odorizer, and I was just like, meh. VCR cleaner. Yeah, okay, I guess.
VCR cleaner.
Yeah. Well, that maybe I don't know if we should be all using this, but yeah.
Wow.
But it's interesting as well, the conversation about Poppers just generally in the UK and beyond, politically how they're used and seen sometimes. And I know there's been some people obviously say that they should be banned and they're super dangerous, which there's no evidence for.
Mm-hmm.
And on the same side, there's also the politicians that you would least expect supporting them. So I remember there was a news article about Priti Patel saying that they wouldn't be classed as classed as any sort of a drug, and obviously Twitter thought it was time to girl boss Priti Patel of all people, because she maybe had one thing that she said right. But that's another story. So yeah, it was really, really interesting to speak to Adam after reading the book especially. So yeah, give it a read, give it a little look into this History Month, and yeah, let us know your thoughts on poppers. Before we go into positive thing of the week, one little side note that I need to say: the EHRC, the Equality and Human Rights Commission in the UK, released a statement yesterday, and essentially have now been condemned by a lot of LGBT and other organisations, because they've put out a statement that essentially has the same anti-trans rhetoric as a lot of that movement have had. So I know the LGBT Foundation, for example, have cut ties and made a very firm statement about kind of the direction that the EHRC has gone in. It is not, I would say, independently dealing with human rights issues in the way it should be as a supposed human rights organisation. I know there's a lot of influence in the EHRC now from the current government, so that has probably played a large part into it. But it was also around the same time this week shared that the UK now lists alongside the likes of Hungary, Russia, just a few other countries that at the bottom of the list for LGBT progression and safety. So I think we've discussed it in many, many episodes over the last year and a bit. If the alarm bells aren't already going off and you're listening and you're still just kind of getting by your day, I'd say now it's like kind of the end point for you to be getting involved, because whether it's writing to your MP, whether it's getting involved in other organisations and sharing the work that they do or supporting them or donating to whoever you can, if you can, it's just really important that we get involved, because yeah, it's a very slippery slope, and the speed at which we've gone from being seen as a beacon of LGBT equality in this country to the place that we're at right now, especially in regards to trans rights, I think should scare people. So yeah, I just wanted to flag that as we end this, especially given that it's History Month, as yeah, a point of thought. But with that now being said, what was your positive? Let's end on a high. What was your positive of the week?
Sorry, this just made me very tight chested.
As it should.
So actually, my positive thing of the week is a conversation we had with a guest that's coming up next. And it was actually just a really, really interesting interview and conversation, but also it just filled me with lots of joy because of the way she just was with us.
Yeah.
And the ease at which she spoke, and just it was a very comforting conversation with someone that I've not really had in at that level before.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the experience she's had as well. Mm. So yeah, that conversation,
yeah,
which I guess we can now say,
yeah,
it was with Christine Burns MBE, which is going to be the next episode. Mm-hmm. You'll listen to. So that's probably my thing.
Yeah, I would agree on that. And I also would say, I would add to that, this cake.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, the cake. And also, I changed my posters around, which I enjoyed. I needed a bit of a change, so I've now got my favourite Robin poster behind me.
Jesus Christ. She does look good.
Yeah, but that is it.
That's your lot, honey.
That is your lot. Thanks for sticking with us if you've done both episodes in one go. Thanks for listening in two parts, if you've listened in two parts.
Yeah.
As always, we would love it if you could give us a little rating and review on Apple and Spotify now.
Yeah, that'd be really, really gorgina. If you want to know more about anything we've spoken about this episode or the previous episode, you can go to our website, www.bottomingpodcast.com, and see some links to a few other articles and other talking points for you to learn a bit more.
Mm-hmm. And in the meantime as well, we also should have just a very small thing coming out with Acast, who obviously hosts our podcast for History Month. So we'll be recommending some of our favourite podcasts, so keep an eye out across our socials at Bottoming Pod for that as well, because we'll point in the direction of some of our faves.
Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, you are doing amazing, sweetie.
Bunnies, you're doing so amazing.
Love ya.
Bye.
Thank you. Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.